and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, September 17, 2020. President Kiir fires his finance minister.
Changing individuals is not going to do much, because that is what we have been doing for the past 15 years. If South Sudan is ever going to change, people have to be held accountable by institutions and not just by individuals.
And Sudanese authorities detain 40 people suspected of belonging to a terror group.
We monitored the activities of these people who were trading in explosives throughout the tri-capital, and between August 19th and September 13th, we carried out the raids and seized the explosives and arrested those involved.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some South Sudanese are reacting to President Salva Kiir's decision to fire his longtime finance minister, Salvatore Garang Mabior-Did, in an executive order read on the national television Wednesday. The co-founder and former director of the Juba-based SAD Institute, Jock Madur Jock, says changing ministers at the Ministry of Finance will not solve the country's economic crisis. Jock says adherence to the rule of law and accountability in financial transactions is the only solution for South Sudan.
It is not just about changing faces. It is particularly about building institutions of the nation. If it was a nation where institutions count, there is no way that we can all be convinced that so-and-so has stolen money, so-and-so has done bad, so-and-so has done this, and yet at the end of the day, they walk away with their misdeeds and nobody pays for the mistakes that have been made. So changing individuals is not going to do much, because that is what we have been doing for the past 15 years. If South Sudan is ever going to change, people have to be held accountable by institutions and not just by individuals.
Let me just take you back to the issue of individuals and institutions. Question here is, this economic crisis in South Sudan, is it the making of the person in the office of the Ministry of Finance or policies that are not clearly stipulated to, if you like, boost the economy of the country?
It is both. The fact is that we cannot, as a country, rely on the goodwill and the morality of the individual. All human beings, the world over, are governed by laws. And we also say in South Sudan that we are governed by laws. If we are going to be governed by laws, there is no way a country can simply rely on the goodness of men and women. The country can only rely on the law to enforce whatever it wants men and women to do. The problem we have in South Sudan is that our president relies on people being good. If they don't do good, he removes them and then replaces them, only for that new person to do the same thing and the same thing and the same thing all over. When do we change? Let every single citizen in the country be equal before the law, and that when they do bad and break the law, let the law deal with them.
Let's look at this new finance minister, a gentleman by the name of Atian Ding Atian. There is a new acting commissioner for the National Revenue Authority, a gentleman by the name of Africano Mande. And there is a new gentleman at the Nile Pet, an individual called Bol Morwell. If you are given an opportunity to advise these new faces, what would you tell them?
We look for where there is capacity, where there is capability. We look for the person, the man or woman whom we think is capable of doing things. And that's the second thing we look at. The third thing, perhaps even more important, is that South Sudan is a very diverse, multi-ethnic, multi-religious, multi-ideology society. If you are a president of such a country, I would not put Atian Ding Atian, the Minister of Finance from Gogreal, in the Ministry of Finance together with the person who comes from the same community and the next person who comes from the same community in such key plum positions in a country that I know people are going to complain. Anything like this is going to be Dinka domination, it's going to be Jiang this and Jiang that, and ethnicity is going to be the only lens through which we see our country. Let us change that. For God's sake, our country has suffered enough.
What practical steps must be taken in order to save South Sudan's economy from this looming meltdown?
The practical steps are obvious, Stanza. One is that men and women are always weak when it comes to issues of believability, credibility, and justness of our behavior. God knows we are all challenged from all corners by wealth versus poverty. And our people have been subjected to a lot of poverty. So if in the end, what matters is whether you should be just or you should just go for your own belly as an individual, there is likelihood that men and women in South Sudan will go for their belly and not for their for the welfare of the people. So the only thing that can change this, you know, there is the national legislature, which should question national ministers on their behavior. There are other laws, including economic security laws, where if you misbehave and people suspect that you do misbehave, the security people can investigate you. And there are institutions such as the National Audit Chamber. The Audit Chamber can investigate all of us, and if there is irregularity, the chamber can now appeal to the legal oversight institutions in the country, the anti-corruption, there is parliament, there is judiciary. Why do we always avoid going through institutions? Why can't we address problems that face our country through the lens of the law?
That's Jogmadu Jog, co-founder and former director of the Juba-based SAD Institute. He spoke with me yesterday from Syracuse, New York. Sudanese authorities say they have tracked down a suspected terrorist cell in the capital Khartoum who allegedly possessed massive amounts of explosives, including TNT and ammonium nitrate. The country's attorney general says more than 40 people have been detained for further investigations. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
Brigadier General Jomar Adam, a spokesperson for Sudan's paramilitary rapid support forces, said yesterday their forces carried out intelligence operations under the supervision of the Attorney General's office, which led to the seizure of huge amounts of explosives being sold in the capital Khartoum.
We monitored the activities of these people who were trading in explosives throughout the tri-capital, and between August 19th and September 13th, we carried out the raids and seized the explosives and arrested those involved.
In March, Sudan's Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok survived an apparent assassination attempt that targeted his motorcade while on his way to his office. The attackers used explosives that Adam says are similar to what his forces captured. A number of suspects were arrested in connection with the attack, but the results of an investigation, which Sudanese officials say include the FBI, have yet to be made public. Adam says such explosives pose a threat to more than just Sudan's national security.
The amount of explosives we seized are huge indeed, and the danger is not just to Sudanese citizens, but it's also about our open borders with our neighboring countries that are unstable, and from there to the outside world. And we fear that we could be redesignated as a country that exports these compounds, and that would cause us regional and international problems.
Sudanese Attorney General Tayasir al-Hibir says the explosives seized include substances that are used to make bombs as well as for industrial purposes.
The raids resulted into seizure of very dangerous explosives that include TNT and ammonium nitrate, which, as you know, is the same substance that recently blew up the port of Beirut in Lebanon.
Al-Hibir says dozens of suspects were arrested in connection with the explosive materials that were confiscated.
We have arrested 41 suspects, and the process was carried out under the supervision of the Office of the Attorney General because both the Rapid Support Forces and the Office of the Attorney General follow this closely at the highest levels. For instance, analysis revealed that these compounds are dangerous enough to blow up the country's capital, if I'm not mistaken.
He says his office has intelligence that there are terrorist cells in different places in Khartoum, and this operation by the Rapid Support Forces and the investigation underway is handled by a prosecutor specializing in counterterrorism. Adam says the substances seized by their forces are only used by industries under strict regulations and supervision of the army. He is calling for an investigation into how the explosives ended up in the hands of civilians. Both Adam and Al-Hibir are calling on citizens to be vigilant and report any suspicious activities to the authorities. The arrests come at a time when Sudan is trying to convince the Trump administration to remove Sudan from the U.S. list of state sponsors of terrorism. U.S. officials say the administration has reached an agreement in principle with Sudan's transitional government to achieve that goal. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
Authorities in Jonglei's state capital, Bor, have ordered employees of the government, local NGOs, international NGOs, the public and soldiers to turn up to repair a broken dike that has led to flooding in the town. Flood water levels have turned Bor town into a lake. The Jonglei state acting administrator is calling on residents of the town to help save it from sinking. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Floodwaters moved through Haimachuor site, where a broken dike caused widespread flooding in Bor town and neighboring areas. Local youth, soldiers and aid workers use wooden logs and bamboo poles to erect a fence, then fill a sandbox to block the flowing of water. 37-year-old Bor resident Nabra Maleu, who works for a local NGO in Bor, says he skipped work today to help repair the dike. Aliu says repairing the dike should be handled by the government. He says he has no other options but to help save the town.
Yeah, we are here doing the work of government. We are doing the work of government actually. Put in there is no effort double by government. So that can rescue the situation of our people. That's why youth mobilize themselves and they are maintaining dike. You know, we have 8 hours today. From morning, from 9 a.m. up to now. We are just finishing in single center.
The acting director of Civil Defense Forces or Jonglei State Fire Brigade, Captain John Deng Dao, says the main job of Civil Defense Forces is to save lives during disasters like the ongoing floods across the state. But Dao says the Civil Defense lacks the tools and machines needed to do its job.
Our forces and our officers are going there. Dayakana is working with the people of the Jonglei state also. Because we are going and we are working in our hand only, that is our contribution. Because we don't have anything that we can help the people, or we can take the people to any place that there is no any water. So we don't have any motorboat, water generator. Take the water to the river also.
Jonglei State Acting Administrator Duom Kualager says the increased water level has overrun the town center. Ager says he has ordered all offices and shops to close so town's people show up to repair the dike in order to save the town from being submerged in water.
The water is taking over the market, Maror market. So it's better to close the market for the time being. And not to close in the, you see, you close it halfway, you see. And then this will allow people to go to the site. Because if you open the market, some people will be taking tea there. Some people will be playing cards there, you see.
Ager says everybody in Bor should help repair the dike because the state government has limited resources to hire experts.
If people are not serious, water will take over, and that's all about it. It will get you in your own house. So why don't you come out from your own house and go to fight the water? Whether you are in public sector, whether you are in private sector, whether you are in business community, whether you are a foreigner, whether you are a local person, it is the concern of all of us.
Last month, a fundraising campaign organized in Juba by the native sons and daughters of Jonglei State to control flooding in Bor Town raised more than 40 million South Sudanese pounds and more than $80,000. The money is being used to provide food for the workers. President Salva Kiir declared a state of emergency last month in Jonglei and Pibor administrative area due to the intercommunal fighting and widespread flooding. Aliu says he hoped the government should intervene in controlling the flooding, but he says nothing much has been done.
How can the government declare the state of emergency and keep silent like that? Even they are delaying the implementation of peace agreement. We are waiting for governor to come to Jonglei State. There is no commissioners, lawmakers are not there, and government is still calling itself government. So this is terrible.
For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, some residents of Eastern Equatoria State complain about frequent harassment by cattle keepers. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you correct friends and loved ones?
I tell them the truth, because when I hide it, sometimes I have to tell them again and explain, which is not so fun. Yeah, it's easier for everyone.
You tell him what you have done is wrong. Next time, don't do like this, according to what he has done.
The first step I do actually is that I talk to the person. I sit back a little bit to be able to ascertain if it really went down with the person. To give the person a breathing space, just to ponder about whatever I said. And in the course of time, too, I allow process to have its way.
When they go wrong, I call them aside and talk to them. I tell them their behavior is very bad, so they need to stay away from it. And some of them get angry, but I don't care.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Some residents of Eastern Equatoria State are accusing cattle keepers from Jonglei State of harassing, intimidating, and beating up civilians. The governor of Eastern Equatoria State says his government is working to resolve the matter. For VOA News, David Monodanga reports from Juba.
Local leaders say the cattle keepers are abusing civilians, primarily in Magwe County's Agoro Payam. Local chief Otto Washington Okwera says many cattle keepers graze their cattle on crop farms.
When you dig, the cattle come and destroy all the things from the garden. The situation is just remain worse. Also, those people, the owner of the cattle, also they give a hard life, because when the cattle has eaten the garden, when you go and follow, they will going to turn that you want to steal their cattle. You will be beaten thoroughly.
Okwera says these abuses are scaring the civilians in Magwe County. He says some residents have even fled to neighboring Uganda or Kenya for fear of losing their lives. Eastern Equatoria State Governor Louis Lobong says the cattle keepers never asked for permission to graze their cattle in the farming communities of Acholi and Madi.
These cattle keepers, they came, there was no information. They have never asked the host community that can you allow us to graze, nor we, the state government. We are not aware. And we only seen that they are coming there. And there was no even information from their origin, the state where they came from, or even from their leaders, that our people are running for this reason.
Abraham Makur, Secretary General of Cattle Keepers in Greater Magwe County, denies cattle keepers are abusing civilians, but admits hundreds of head of cattle are being transported to Eastern Equatoria due to insecurity and recent floods in Jonglei State. He warns that more and more people and cattle are migrating to the Equatoria region from Jonglei.
So it's not only the Greater Magwe, but we talk of the Greater Equatoria. They are coming to Equatoria because of the area is now flooding. So at the moment, there is no way that we can tell the cattle keepers to go back to Jonglei, because there is nowhere people even can settle. And even those who are living now in Bor, some people are now across the area. Some have come to Mangalore. come and come to the Juba. So there is no place now in jungle again.
Makuru is calling on communities to be patient with cattle keepers until the floodwaters have subsided in jungle estate. He says then cattle keepers will be asked to go back home. Governor Lobong says state officials are working to peacefully resolve the conflict, including face-to-face dialogue between pastoralists and jungle estate leaders.
It doesn't mean that we are not capable of taking this role or making people to leave Eastern Equatoria by force, but that requires, that means then there is going to be confrontation, there's going to be fighting, and lots of lives, people will die, we don't want that.
Mm.
We need to talk, we need to understand why are they here, or for how long are they here, and when are they going back.
In 2017, President Salva Kiir issued an order for pastoralists to leave the Equatorial region and return to their place of origin, since most communities in Equatoria grow crops. Lobong says that order remains in place in Eastern Equatoria, but must be implemented by law enforcement agencies, including the South Sudan People's Defense Force. SSPDF spokesman Major General Luluroy Kwang says the 2017 order is stale, and the only way to drive cattle keepers out of Equatoria is if the president issues a new one.
At the time, all those who come from neighboring states were ordered to go back to their home states with their livestock. Those who came from lakes went. All those who came from Western Equatoria went. Those from Jongle went. However, we had cases of cattle keepers from Jongle coming back to Eastern Equatoria.
Mm.
But that was in violation of that Republican order that was issued. So that there's need for another one to be issued for us to implement the return of cattle herders.
Kwang says all orders were implemented and observed by cattle keepers. The problem, he says, is that as soon as the cattle keepers reach jungle estate, they come back. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
More than 100 South Sudanese students studying for the Sudan School Certificate in Uganda traveled to Juba to write their final exams. The Sudanese Embassy in Uganda made arrangements for the students at the Kampala-based Sudanese-Uganda Friendship School to write the exams in Kampala, but the Ugandan government refused to allow supervisors to travel from Juba to Kampala. For VOA News, Onen Walter Solomon reports from Juba.
Some 117 South Sudanese students traveled from Uganda and joined 75 other students in Juba to write this year's Sudan School Certificate exams at Fatima Fakuru Secondary School in Juba. 17-year-old Nicholas James is one of the 192 students. He traveled from Kampala to Juba last week to take exams. Nicholas says the Sudan-Uganda Friendship Secondary School Administration in Kampala informed students that their request to Uganda Education Ministry to allow students to sit for exams in Kampala was turned down because exam supervisors were not in Kampala and could not enter the country due to COVID-19 travel restrictions.
But then they said if we were to do it from there, then the supervisors who are to come supervisors would have to have been quarantined for 2 weeks, and we're supposed to start our exams for 13th.
Francis Mustafa Manas, headmaster of the African Council Private Secondary School in Juba, says in February, Khartoum postponed March examinations until September due to COVID-19. Manas says all centers authorized to administer Sudan school certificate examinations outside of Sudan were expected to provide examinations papers to students enrolled in Sudanese schools. He says despite the COVID-19 pandemic, the South Sudan government accepted a request from Sudan's Higher Education Ministry to allow students to travel to Juba in order to take their exams.
The Vice President Riek Machar accepted it through the Council of Ministers, the COVID-19 also. They said yes, the exams can be done because we are preparing for Form 4 examination. So letter was brought to us here in the center. I received the letter and I said, they asked me, say, if it's possible for us to conduct the examination. I said, yes, possible, because the number was only 75 students. 75 is less, can be about four classes. So all of a sudden, we get a report that in Uganda, the government of Uganda refused for the exams we conducted in Uganda.
Manasseh is at the African Council Private Secondary School, started 6 years ago in South Sudan, with centers in Kampala, Uganda, Ethiopia, and Saudi Arabia, among other countries, to help students who could not cope with the South Sudan education curriculum after cessation from the Sudan in 2011.
When we separated from most of the students were studying in Arabic by then, studying in Sudan curriculum. So when we came here, they could not continue with the South Sudan syllabus. So the government agreed that we should be given 5 to 6 years to study the same curriculum of Sudan, sit for exam.
Abdul Karim Ibrahim Mohammed, deputy director of the Sudan-Uganda's Friendship Secondary School in Kampala, says 13 candidates did not turn up for the examinations because their parents either could not afford the cost of transporting their children to Juba or feared the risk of their children contracting COVID-19.
Each family covered their students' feeding, accommodation, and transport fare to and from Juba. Each student paid a bus fare of 90,000 Ugandan shillings from Kampala to Nimule and between 3,000 and 5,000 South Sudanese pounds from Nimule to Juba.
Simon Nyok is Secretary General of South Sudan's Examinations Council and the administrator of the African Council of Education and Development.
We have worked so closely with the International Task Force of COVID-19 amidst all the challenges of the pandemic. We also thank our brothers, the Sudanese Embassy, the ambassador here, who have worked so closely with us to ensure that these children have opportunities for their exams. Despite the fact that we are in a crisis, we made it happen.
20-year-old Adela Aldo, who hails from Wau, is one of the candidates in this year's Sudan School Certificate Examinations. Aldo says she was studying in a school in Khartoum until April, when her parents brought her back to Juba. Aldo says she is happy to be taking her final exam.
I couldn't believe that I would come and sit for my exam because the government of Sudan postponed it to an unknown date, and I lost hope. I thought that I would never study again, and 5 months indoor, and it was so bad. So when they announced that the exams were on September this month, it gave me hope to study and to move on with my career.
Aldo says school administrators are allowing only 20 students to sit in each classroom, rooms which normally accommodate 45 learners, and providing reusable face masks to exam candidates to prevent the spread of COVID-19.
When we came out of the examination room is when we removed them. The first day we sat for examination, they all gave us these masks.
The exams began on September 13 and will run through September 24th. For VOA News, I am Onel Walter Solomon reporting from Juba.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Nzambeya Sekele by Moise Matuta. This one goes out to Pastor Adolf Kambele Mwera at Konyokonyo Market in Juba.
Losambwa Sekele Des poumons à mon Christ, respiration à moi dans Zambé, c'est la prière.
We've been listening to Moise Matuta with the song Nzambeya Sekele. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your phones, homes, and vehicles. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask if you must leave your home. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.